Ridiculous History is a production of iHeartRadio. Welcome to the show, Ridiculous Historians. Thank you so much for tuning in. Now, it is no secret that this show, which we very much enjoy making, is not just a bunch of fun for us. It's also literally our jobs, which means we deal with some very strange legal situations. We're going somewhere with this. My name's Ben.
My name is Noel. Ben, have you ever heard of the band Negative Land?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, what do they do?
They have a song called Copyright Infringement is Your Best Entertainment Value. Maybe it's not a song, but it's definitely a slogan of theirs. I used to have a t-shirt. But they were notorious for uncleared samples that pissed people off quite a lot. They made an album called U2. On the cover of the album, it has the letter U and the numeral 2, and then Negative Land, very small at the bottom. And they were sued by the band U2, but this actual album contained clips of famous radio DJ Casey Kasem, these outtakes where he's doing a dedication to a song for someone's dead dog.
Not to be confused with super producer Casey Pegram.
That's right. Casey Pegram, are you familiar with the letter U and the numeral 2?
I am indeed.
Yeah. And the dog's name is Fluffy, and you hear him getting riled up in between takes where he's like, these guys are from England, and who gives a you know? Casey Kasem in his hearing him in his non-jovial kind of worst was a lot of fun. But copyright infringement is a big part of what we do. Not infringement specifically, but avoiding being sued for infringement, shall we say, yes?
So a few years ago, I made a rookie mistake on an episode of Car Stuff with my good pal, my ride or die, Scott Benjamin, and we sang a snatch of the birthday song on the air. Now, the birthday song, it's exactly the song you're thinking of, is it has copyright, it has legal protection, which is why you never hear it on sitcoms, for instance, or even high-quality television shows like Breaking Bad or something like that. You'll hear something else. It's because you have to legally pay someone to use that music. And nowadays, copyright law is something that we associate more with the modern age. And I'm saying modern age as in like the last 200 years,
sure. You
know? But today's episode is about a much older version of a copyright scrap. And no, it's not about the mouse and how the mouse affects copyright law.
Which mouse? The mouse?
The mouse.
Mickey?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is about a entirely different story. And it's pretty old. I was surprised by how long ago this occurred, Noel.
I was too, Ben. But in order to talk about historic copyright law, we have to first discuss something called the Statute of Anne, which was passed in 1710 in Great Britain, now the United Kingdom. And before this statute was passed, publishers had an absolute monopoly. But the Statute of Anne did what very much what the idea of like a public domain kind of does. So 21 years of publishing rights for the copyright holder, and the idea was to promote the printing of new material. But the idea of copyright has existed way before even this historic copyright law. Around 560 AD, we have a story that actually involves a sort of a mini war, a skirmish, I guess you could say, based around copyright. And it all had to do with the ownership of a particular book of Psalms, or a Psalter, known as the Cathach, which is one of the oldest surviving handwritten manuscripts in Ireland. And this beef was between two saints, canonized monks of the Catholic Church in Ireland, Saint Columba and Saint Finian.
That's right. Nowadays, and even back during the days of the Statute of Anne, copyright infringement will land you in court. You'll have to pay fines and fees. You probably won't go to jail. You probably won't be physically injured. In this case, Thousands of people would die as St. Finian and St. Columba went head to head. And it was all over the ownership of a copy of that Psalter that you mentioned earlier, Noel. Now, this Irish pronunciation, it's a little tricky for us because we do not speak Gaelic ourselves. It's spelled C-A-T-H-A-C-H. Ka? Katha?
Yeah, it was like we heard, let's let the computer talk.
This is from a phrase, con cad ka. Here we go.
Con cad ka.
Con cad ka.
It's got a ha at the end, yeah, it sounds ha. Like. That's what con I was trying to, ka. There you go.
The reason this book is important is that today it is the oldest surviving manuscript written in Ireland. It is attributed to St. Columba. So the guy we call St. Columba now was born Colmkill or Colmkill in about 521.
He had a lot of names too. Like one of them was Colm McPhailin McFergus, which I love.
It's a lot of fun. Much. It's McPhailin a lot of, McFergus.
McFergus. It's a very lilting, gentle thing to say.
And Sil was added to his first name because he spent so much time as a kid in the local church. The Gaelic word for church is Sil, spelled C-I-L-L-E.
That's right. And Colm Sil, or Kill, is actually translated to church dove in Gaelic.
Yeah.
So he was born in Donegal, Ireland, and he was a descendant of Clan O'Donnell, a royal descendant, in fact. And we'll just refer to him as St. Columba from here on out because that's easier to say. He spent most of his life, literally, with his nose in books, studying in monastic schools in early Christian Ireland, and he became part of a pretty important crew, the 12 Disciples of Ireland, who were 12 very, very learned gentlemen who studied under St. Finian himself. He also became a monk eventually and was a priest.
Ah, there we go. Player two has entered the game. Could you tell us a little bit about St. Finian?
Yes. So St. Finian of Clonard is indeed player two, also known as Cluain Erard, E-R-A-I-R-D. Couldn't find that one on Forvo. Or Finian or Finonane. And he was one of the earliest monastic saints of Ireland. He lived from 470 to 549. So again, he was this very important teacher over this group of very influential monks and scholars. In Ireland. He would have been much older than them at the time in question of this story. He is thought to have been born in Meischl County, Carlow, and he was himself placed under the care of another monk when he was a wee lad named St. Forthcairn, and that is the gentleman who taught him the ways of the Lord in Wales, actually.
Probably also taught him to read.
Yeah, of course. And that was a big deal because these manuscripts that we're talking about and the whole notion of copyright very much hinges on this thing we take for granted today is the ability to read. And you had to be studying under some very high level, you know, scholars in order to have that ability.
It was a special skill. You know, if we're just being off the cuff, it was kind of like being able to fly a hot air balloon. You might know someone who could read or know someone who knows someone, but you probably wouldn't be reading yourself.
Finian eventually kind of solidified his legacy by founding something called the Clonard Abbey, and that is where the 12 apostles of Ireland studied under him in Meath, Ireland.
St. Columba was an honor student in the world of the seminary. He was constantly praying. When I say constantly praying, I'm not being hyperbolic. He was always praying or writing. This guy wrote 300 books over the course of his life. And when we say writes, we also mean original works and we mean transcribing existing works.
That's
which
right.
which was something that quite a few people did in this industry. He was leading what some authors have called the book digitization of his day at Durrow. He and his team of monks copied every single sacred text they could get their hand on, and something strange happened. Around 560 AD, Columba and his mentor, Finian, came at odds. You see, Columba had acquired a new Psalter, a book of Psalms, and he copied it And he said, okay, I've copied it. I'm going to keep my copy of the work. And St. Finian said, oh, no, 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 my friend. I don't think you can do that.
Well, it belonged to him in the first place.
Mm-hmm. And Columbus said, why can't I do this? The argument goes all the way up to the king. The dispute eventually leads to something I will woefully mispronounce. The Battle of Culdreimhne. The Battle of Culdreimhne. So here's how it all went down. St. Columba copies the Psalter. St. Finian says, you can't do that. And of course, we should mention, at this time, these guys aren't saints. They are holy men, but they have not been canonized, beatified, so on.
Yeah, you don't ever refer to a person that's alive as a saint, right? That's pretty exclusively a posthumous thing.
Not officially.
Right.
So they take this argument to the king, and Columba says, it belongs to me because I copied it. Finian says, it belongs to me because I own the original book. He couldn't have made a copy without my book. Therefore, I should have both of them. And in a Shyamalan plot twist, the king gives this following judgment. To every cow belongs her calf. Therefore, to every book belongs its copy. That's not what I was expecting. That doesn't really jibe with the modern day. You know, Columba says, well, I disagree with that. And he doesn't walk away and kick rocks. Instead, he instigates a rebellion against the king. So imagine going to a court, whatever kind of court case you might be involved in, something that is not concerning violence or anything. It's an intellectual property IP mm-hmm. issue. And then getting so angry about what the judge decrees that you decide to overthrow the country, which is what he attempted to do. He did successfully get a clan together to try to overthrow the king.
It's pretty interesting. It actually, there were a few other little things thrown in the mix that led to this series of events.
Oh, yeah. Finian said he didn't give permission, right? For it to be copied.
Well, not only did he not give permission, they were living under the same roof at the time, and it's a little interesting, and we don't really have the details as to why he didn't ask for permission, because it would have taken him an awful long time to transcribe this, because we've actually heard that some accounts that it is actually a Gaelic translation of the Bible, the entire Bible. So to do that by hand, it would have taken him ages, and he had to do it at night without this person's knowledge. So I'm a little confused as to why he didn't just ask. Maybe the guy was just a real pill, as you would say, with his property, and he's like, no, it's mine. What's mine is mine. You can't have it. But I thought their whole goal was to make these texts available more broadly. So I'm confused as to why Finian was being such a jerk about the whole
You're right,
thing.
To proselytize, to spread the word of God.
But even before this beef happened, there was a beef between Columba himself and the king, because mm-hmm. He gave refuge to an escaped political prisoner. And then the king, Diarmuid, actually went against their established laws of sanctuary, or at least their customs, and he had the escapee captured and executed, and then put Columba himself under house arrest, at which point Columba tricked the guards, escaped, and went back to his hometown in Tir Conal, where he then heard that the king was actually pursuing him.
Quick point there, though. This idea of tricking guards and escaping doesn't make a lot of sense if you think about it. I think there was something more to this story. I think it was bribery. It happens a lot, even in the modern day, when you hear about people escaping
yep.
in a cell or maybe a dodgy, chaotic country.
That's true. But the idea of a little bit more of like a capery kind of like escape, maybe a disguise of some sort, it's a lot more fun to picture than just like slipping the guard, some coin. And this is all wrapped up in the beef with the copied text as well. This was right. That was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back, I guess.
It was the pretext. This text was the pretext for the war.
Exactly.
Or the battle, rather. And this battle, which occurs in 561 AD, leads to, according to sources, you could ballpark it at up to 3,000 deaths. It's not said explicitly who won the battle, but here's the thing. It was Columba who got punished for it, so I feel like we can safely bet the king won that skirmish, and people were deciding what they would do to punish Columba. They even talked about excommunicating him, which was a huge deal. Instead, they let him stay a part of the faith, and he was forced to leave Ireland. And he was given the task to convert as many people to Christianity as had died on the day of that battle. So right. Up to 3,000 people, if he wanted to properly pay his penance.
Yeah, he took this quite seriously. And he took off from Ireland and settled on the Isle of Iona off the west coast of Scotland, the mainland of Scotland. And there he set himself up a monastery. And you may be familiar, that may ring a bell, the Isle of Iona, because that is where many of Scotland's kings were buried, including potentially Macbeth. So he had 12 pals, traveling companions with him, and he settled in 563 and began the work of putting together this monastery and converting folks to Christianity.
So Iona becomes the center of Columba's second act, his redemption story, right? His redemption song, if we want to quote Marley. He works tirelessly teaching the Holy Word, the gospel. He goes all across Scotland, attempting to convert the northern Pictish people. One legend comes out of his adventures, and that's that he actually met Nessie, the Loch Ness monster, and scared it away by making the sign of the cross as the creature approached. His career was not over. He went on to greatness. He became a Roman Catholic clergyman, and he actually contributed to the most famous ancient Irish manuscript, the Book of Kells, which you can go see today at Trinity.
It's also a really delightful children's animated film.
It's true. But even that was not enough to get this stain of copyright beef off of his record, off of his CV. He returned to his native land just one more time before he died. And he passed away on June 9th, 597, in Iona.
Which he had become quite fond of. I mean, like, yeah. He definitely had made this his second home. And it sounds to me like he didn't live a life of exile and shame. I mean, he went on to do really great works and became a very revered figure in the history of Roman Catholicism.
Right, yeah. And he was sort of a proponent of what we would call now copyleft. Have you heard of this?
No.
Copyleft is this arrangement where software or creative works can be used, modified, distributed freely on the condition that anything created by it is bound by the same condition.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? I think that's a great way to pursue innovation. And I also do want to mention one thing about St. Columba. All right, so I'm really into patron saints, right? I'm fascinated by the idea. I want to know your favorite patron saint, especially if they're patron of something obscure. St. Columba is one of the three patron saints of Ireland. We all know the most famous one, St. Patrick, right?
Of course.
But he's also the patron saint of Derry, the town, D-E-R-R-Y.
Not like milk and cheese?
No, he's not that cool. Floods, bookbinders, poets, and Scotland. What about St. Finian, you may ask? He is the patron of the Diocese of Meath.
I would say that Columba came out ahead there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you get for bogarting texts, you know, and being a jerk about letting people copy your stuff, you know. I'd say that generosity is a very important thing when it comes to sharing books, you know. I mean, Ben, you are a very, very well-known book lender. You know, you love for people to experience things that you yourself have enjoyed and found culturally enriching. And I think that's a very important thing when it comes to this stuff. So, you know, be on the right side of history. Let people borrow books.
Right. Be the library you wish to see in the world, to paraphrase Gandhi. Actually, that actually worked out. And we haven't said it yet. We've got a birthday month coming up for the three of us, as well as our pal, Matt Frederick.
It's so wild. All of us. Yeah. Yeah. This is it. We're in the midst of it right now. Casey, myself, you, Ben, and Matt all are our Leos. Roaring Leos.
I'm Virgo.
What?
Yeah.
Get out.
Sorry.
Well, I'm more month-oriented. I don't see a lot of Leoistic traits, but also full disclosure, one of my first freelance writing gigs was writing a horoscope column. And the editor hired me because I said I didn't think there was much to it and that it would be easy to write vague horoscopes. But I got out of it, and I have a lot of respect for people who do believe it as a sort of psychological evaluation. But I don't know. I don't know if you could look at the four of us and say, well, we have a lot in common. We're human, right? We have the same number of limbs.
It's true.
That's I don't know.
Personality-wise, though, I've always found, I've observed that there are some pretty interesting traits that you can associate with people's personalities that are, you know, predicted by astrology. But, you know, it's that confirmation bias thing that always throws a wrench into the works there. Yeah.
Or what if we're messing with people's personalities from the day that they can understand a language by telling them that's their personality?
Yeah, I don't know about all that. I've always been pretty fascinated by it and found some stuff that was pretty interesting for me. But, you know, we welcome all perspectives when it comes to everything. And here's an interesting little tidbit to wrap up on. In 1957, there was an archaeologist in Britain named Charles Thomas who excavated this wooden hut on the Isle of Iona and believed, without any way to prove it, that it belonged to St. Columba. And only just recently, in 2017, a team of historians belonging to Historic Environment Scotland did radiocarbon dating on some of the samples that were found in 1957 during that excavation, and they found pieces of something called hazel charcoal that they were able to date back 1,500 years to a time when Columba was absolutely in the thick of his Iona days.
Cool.
So there you go.
So he did. He did live there.
He did. And those radiocarbon dated the site back about 1,500 years to a time when Columba was absolutely living there. So this definitely would have been his hut. And this would have been the time where he was spreading Christianity to the Pictish people of the Scottish Isles. So that would have been more of a Celtic polytheistic religion, almost akin to something we would refer to as paganism.
Celtic polytheism probably often depicted as druids or something. In popular mass media, but I think it's always a wonderful and inspiring thing when we are able to connect these ancient stories with true physical artifacts, do a little bit of object journalism, which I have to talk about later. I'm really into this thing now. I will say in the defense of horoscopes, astrology, and other sorts of psychological batteries, for anyone who may be concerned that I'm poo-pooing it or throwing out the baby with the heavenly bathwater, I do want to say one thing that's been creepy for most of my life. I've always ended up dating Aquarians. I don't know why. I seriously think there was maybe one exception in middle school.
Aquariuses?
I think it's Aquarians, isn't it?
Would it be? I guess so. Yeah. I never thought about that.
And did you ever hear about that 13th astrological sign?
No.
That was found? It's a story for another day. Casey, do you remember that one?
I don't remember this, no.
Oh my gosh, you guys, it's a true story, but we don't have time for it today. Thank you so much for tuning in. What are your favorite patron saints and what are they patrons of? Bonus points if it's super obscure. And hey, Noel, what would you be the patron saint of?
Probably procrastination, Ben.
Patron saint of procrastination. I like it. I like it. Casey, I'm not going to put you on the spot because I know you hate that. So let's just call you the patron saint of not being put on the spot for today. How's that sound?
There you go. I love that.
And what would you be the patron saint of? Let us know. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on Twitter. You can catch me on my personal Instagram at Ben Bolin, or on Twitter, where I'm at Ben Bolin HSW.
I mainly just rock the Instagram at How Now Noel Brown. Another fun place to get in touch is through our Facebook group, Ridiculous Historians. You can do that by searching for Ridiculous Historians on Facebook, and you just have to answer a simple question. Name one of the members of the show. It could be me, it could be Ben, it could be Super Producer Casey Pegram, could be Jonathan Strickland the Quizster, could be Christopher Osiotis, could just be a fun little joke or a pun.
Yeah, if you, I mean, honestly, if you make me laugh, you're in, right?
Absolutely. Hey, and do us a solid. Write us a review on the podcast platform of your choice. But doing it through Apple Podcasts is always a super helpful way of helping people discover the show.
Yeah. Every week, one of our bosses walks through the office dragging a heavy headsman's axe. And if we don't get good reviews, sometimes that axe swings.
It's true.
I mean, not like at us in a dangerous way. HR would never allow that.
No, just more like kind of in an intimidating thing. He sort of drags it across the ground with sort of a scree kind of sound and occasionally a whoosh, you know.
But it's a psyop.
Luckily, we haven't actually been injured by this giant axe yet. But you can make sure that definitely never happens by writing those iTunes reviews.
Yes. So thanks to you for listening. Thanks to our super producer, Casey Pegram. Thanks to Jonathan Strickland, that rapscallion, that scad, that scoundrel we call the Quister.
Thanks to Alex Williams, who composed our theme, research associates Gabe Lucier and Ryan Barish. Thanks to Christopher Hasiotis, here always in spirit. And thanks to you, Ben Bolin, for being a checker shirt wearing friend.
Thanks to you, Noel Brown, and thanks to you, St. Columba, for looking out for bookbinders.
We'll see you next time, folks. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.